Good morning again. I'm going to give you some material that PowerPoint that yesterday morning during Sabbath school time I didn't use, and I intended to show it to you. If we can go to the PowerPoint, Steve. Okay, this is the quotation from Christ's subject lesson. I want to just pick out some things. Oops, there I go doing it again. Okay. Christ is waiting with longing desire for the manifestation of himself in his church. When the character of Christ shall be perfectly reproduced in his people, then he'll come to claim them as his own. Right. When the fruit is brought forth, immediately he putteth in the sickle, because the harvest is ripe. So it's Jesus is waiting for the harvest. Where all who profess his name bearing fruit to his glory, how quickly the whole world would be sown with the seed of the gospel. Quickly, the last great harvest would be ripened, and Christ would come to gather the precious grain. What is that harvest? The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. This fruit can never perish, but will produce after its kind a harvest unto eternal life. And these lists of the fruits of the Spirit are as good a list of values as anyone could say, this is what I will strive to be. Loving, joyful, peaceful, long-suffering, patient, gentle, good, faith, meekness, and temperance. The graces of the Spirit will ripen in your character. And I found that helpful, because as I struggle towards, there's a chap who does our IT at the office in the union, and I spoke about values once to the union staff, and he told me that he decided after that meeting that he would embed loving kindness into his life. And he thought that was a good thing, and I thought it was a good thing too. But a week later he came and saw me and said, Lou, this is much harder than I thought. I thought I would just I'd be able to point out all the loving kindness things I do. But he says, as I reflected on it, I realized I'm really bad at this. And he's a good guy. But the good news is they will ripen. Keep at it. Don't give up. Your faith will increase as you practice the fruits of the Spirit. Your faith will increase, and I think you find that when you find you occasionally catch yourself going the second mile in some small way, and you think, "Wow, that's not usually me," and you recognize God's Spirit working in your life, ripening the fruit. Your convictions will deepen. Your love be made perfect. And occasionally there are people who will say, Lou, it's not just being loving. You've got to have, otherwise it's just wishy-washy, waffly, and anything goes kind of thing. But actually, if you work at the fruits of the Spirit, your convictions deepen. Your love be made perfect. More and more you will reflect the likeness of Christ in all that is pure and noble and lovely. And then the last part of it. It is the privilege of every Christian not only to look for, but to hasten the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ. And there it goes into the fruit bearing again. And again, we tend to think that, you know, if we could only be out there getting our doctrines across, getting them into people's homes and houses and whatever, then the end will come. Well, it doesn't say that. It says it's our work is to develop the fruits of the Spirit, and I believe God will sort the other parts out. And what interests me, in particularly in Egypt and in many of the Muslim countries, God comes in dreams and visions to so many stories of them coming to Muslims of in vision and in spirit. There was one man particularly came from Yemen, and Yemen is a horrendous place to be. It's a total chaotic mess at present, like most of the Arab countries are. But he one night, very devout Muslim, one night he said he was lying there in bed and he said this being walked into his room and he said he recognized it was Prophet Isa, Jesus. And Isa told him, if you must know the truth, you must find a Seventh-day Adventist to teach you the truth. And he said, who are they? He said, you find a Seventh-day Adventist. There are only there are a handful of Adventists in Yemen, mainly working with ADRA. We have ADRA in Yemen, but we don't have any church in Yemen, except those few that are there gather for church. But he was a businessman. He traveled regularly to Cairo. And when he traveled over to Cairo, he found out about Seventh-day Adventists. He came to our office. And we were all suspicious of him in case he was kind of an undercover person set to trip us up and report us. But he came and told his story, and he asked if he could have Bible studies. And one of the pastors there began Bible studies with him. And he gave me a little Yemen knick-knack, which I remember him by. But he told us, I didn't know anything about Adventists. But Prophet Isa told me to come and find you. You people have the truth. And if that can happen there, I do not see any reason why God cannot say, you know, this church I've got is a wonderful place. I'm going to bring people to it. I'm not saying we shouldn't witness. Not at all. Of course we should witness. And one of the very simple definitions is our job is to say, look at the Lamb that takes away the sin of the world. Look, that's the biblical definition of witness. Look. It's not about me. It's about looking to Jesus. All right. But wow, I think God can lead people through His Spirit. Okay. It has to do with the embedding of the fruits of the Spirit into the Christian life. If a man love me, Jesus said, Christ said, he will keep my words, and my Father will love him, and we'll come unto him, make our abode with him. This is this making the home thing that I mentioned yesterday. Make our home with him. The spell. When I first read this, it was coming up to Halloween, and I thought, spell's not the right word. But I thought, well, maybe it is the right word. The spell of a stronger, a perfect mind will be over us, for we have a living connection with the source of all enduring strength. In our divine life, we'll be brought into captivity to Jesus Christ. We shall no longer live the common life of selfishness, but Christ will live in us. His character will be reproduced in our nature. And that interests me, the word nature, most because by nature, we are self-centered. Anybody who disagrees with that doesn't know themselves. But it talks about as you live with Christ, this spell comes over us. We are brought into captivity to him. Slowly, it's not an overnight process. It's a slow process. And all of you know what I'm talking about. All of you know how Christ has grown you, and you need to keep growing. His character will be reproduced in our nature. Thus shall we bring forth the fruits of the Spirit. Some 60, some 30, and some 100-fold. And I think I mentioned yesterday, I like this last part because I think reproducing the character of Christ is not a matter of now I'm perfect. It's a matter of some parts of your life, you're going to come forward 30-fold. That's fine. That's the harvest Jesus is looking for. Some 60, some even 100. I'm down between the 30 and the 40 somewhere. But it's not a matter of, hey, we're all going to come to the perfect fruition and perfectly producing fruits. But, hey, Jesus is looking for growth, progress. Okay, going back to this idea of abiding. John bore witness, I saw the Spirit descend from heaven like a dove, and it remained on him. And the Greek word is it abided with him. It stayed in his company. Our problem is that we, sometimes in the Spirit, sometimes not. John 14, Jesus answered, if anyone loves me, he will keep my word and my Father will love him and we will come to him and make our home with him. I wish I'd brought the Message Bible. It says Jesus moves in to live with you. Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. And again, this word abide read it as unless he comes and lives with you. Live with me and I will live with you. Just like a branch needs to be that unity with the vine, neither can you do anything unless you live with me. And I like that much better than Jesus sort of over me, this is what you got to do. It is, he moves in, becomes my roommate, you know, part of the home. He's part of the family. And we grow as we relate, which happens in your homes, you know, somebody comes to stay with you and you influence each other. But as you see the beauty of Christ and contemplate his life more, you begin to experience the spell. If you abide, if you live with me, and my words live with you, ask whatever you wish, it'll be done for you. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit, and so prove to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. And that's an interesting, the commentary I was looking at that I referred to again yesterday, talked about this kurid, we use the God cuddling you. That's what God does when he loves you. He cuddles you. That's the Jesus and the Father of the bosom of the Father image. And so when it says, my Father, as the Father has loved me, just like the Father cuddles me, so he loves you. So have I loved you. Live, abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. All right. And a number of people said yesterday, I remember Malcolm last night was saying it's a spiritual issue. And it is. In the end, it's a spiritual issue. But it's more than just think, well, okay, let's be spiritual people and not be... I believe there requires discipline to put the values of the Spirit into your life. Like Tando, at this chap at the office in the union office, says to me, Lou, it's much harder than I thought. And I'm finding I have to pray a lot more. I'm finding I have to apologize to my wife when I'm upset with her and I realize I shouldn't have been. And I find myself backing up and having to apologize to people. And I said, Tando, that takes discipline. He said, terrible discipline. I don't like doing it. But he said, I recognize if I'm going to embed the fruits of the Spirit into my life, I need to have the humility to say to people, I'm sorry. Please forgive me for the way I talked to you yesterday. And don't allow ourselves to just, that's nothing. Forget it. I'm going to show you a video clip. This is the new, I don't want to give it away. This is one of my favorite video clips. And those of you who have not seen this before, and I think I've shown it in a Scottish context, so you've probably all seen it, but have anybody not seen it? Oh, good, good. What's the advert? What is it advertising? Creef, Seventh-day Adventist Church. You didn't know that? isn't that a fantastic core value? We will embrace the stranger as one of our own. I would love that to be, I don't know, the British Union Conference video. This is who we are. This is what we're here for. Like I think Steve said yesterday, in William Booth's message to his people was others. That's the only thing that matters as a Salvation Army. And here it is, to embrace the stranger as one of our own. Okay, let's finish the video. What's the next part? Just stop it there again. It's in our nature. Shangri-La Hotels. Oh, it can finish now, Steve. Shangri-La Hotels is a very expensive hotel chain. It originates from the Far East. But they've worked out their value. This is what drives everything we do, to make the stranger feel like one of our own. But they haven't just got a value. They say it is in our nature. We have embedded it. And those are the two things that we as Christians have to do. Okay, love, joy, peace, those things as the values that are important, but now we have the task of embedding them into. I think the old word that was used was the word sanctification. I'm not comfortable with that word a lot because it's been overused so much as striving towards perfection. And getting people who are running around like, I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't, this is, so I'm perfect. And for me, it's become a kind of a negative word. But if you're happy with the word, that's good. But it's what I call a discipline towards building it into our nature is the hard part to do. Okay. Any comments on that so far? Okay. Straight, it's clear as mud, straightforward. Got the idea. There's two parts: know the values, then the discipline of embedding it. All right. Okay. Now I'm going to take you to a company. Talk about a company that I think is an amazing organization that knows how to take its values and build them into its nature. I guess I could have found a Christian church that does it, but. I found it amazing to find this kind of thing in secular organizations. And there are a number. I have a number of favorite companies that I've looked at. I'm sure there are many more than that. But there's a company called Nordstrom's, which we don't have in the UK. They exist in America. It's a retail departmental store in America. And I could tell you amazing stories about the way they serve their customers and how they build that into their staff. By nature, this is how we serve people. This is what we want to do. Now they can do it. Another one is Southwest Airlines. Again, they don't fly in Europe, only in America. But this company has the fewest complaints and the greatest number of thank yous of any airline in America, in the world. I understand. What makes them do that? And if you ever tried to change something on Ryanair, or even with EasyJet, it's getting better. But if you try to change a ticket with them, it is horrendous. Apparently, you can walk up to it, and I've never flown Southwest, maybe Steve has. It's a budget airline, but they know how to do it with sweetness and niceness. And I've read stories of a person wanting to change their ticket and going up to the desk and saying, is it possible at all to change my ticket to catch this earlier flight? I've tried to do that with EasyJet, I think some years ago. The palaver. It's just the hassle and the extra cost. But this person was saying at the Southwest Airlines desk, he put the desk and the lady took the ticket, said, just a minute, went away and did some things, came back and put the ticket down and said, okay, that's fine. He said, what do you mean it's fine? He said, the ticket's changed. You can catch the earlier flight. And he said, no cost? No. And he went away. Just amazing, you know, the kind of service that makes you become loyal. And there's lots of stories about Southwest Airlines. They have a CEO who retired last year, I think. And he's a crazy fellow, I've forgotten his name. But if you go online and look up the previous CEO of Southwest Airlines and listen to some of his speeches, he's a nutcase. He really is. He's very funny, but he's just committed to service. He talks about Southwest Airlines happens to be a people service industry. We happen to fly airplanes, but our job is serving people. And I love it when in news things about him, he walks into one of their offices and the staff all stand and applaud him. Wow. Maybe one day your pastor will walk into the church and the whole church stand up and applaud him and say, wow, what a leader we have. Anyway, okay. So it's Ritz-Carlton that I want to talk about. And the book that I read about their organization is called The New Gold Standard. And Ritz-Carlton arrogantly, I think, claims to be the premier service organization in the world. Every time I read that, I said, no, you are not. We are. You know, that's our master was the servant. Our leader was the servant. And we are the service people of the world, not you. And it's possible for people to argue that they do it for money. But the more I read about their culture, the more I think that's not true. And some months ago, I was talking about Ritz-Carlton at a church in Wales. And I actually made the statement, I'm not really sure if everything that I'm telling you about Ritz-Carlton is true. I've not lived there. I've not been to a Ritz-Carlton hotel. I couldn't afford it. And I've never worked for them. And a lady put her hand up. And she said, Pastor Lou, I used to work for Ritz-Carlton. I said, what? You used to work? I said, come up here. Tell us, what was it like working for Ritz-Carlton? She said, the only reason I moved was because my husband had to change job and move to another area where there wasn't a Ritz-Carlton hotel. She said, otherwise, I would be there still, and I would go back to work for Ritz-Carlton any time. And I said, why? Because she said, what you're saying about their culture is true. I discovered it. And she said, I loved working for Ritz-Carlton. I'm not sure what she did, but she just loved to work in that culture. Wouldn't you like to hear people saying that about, I love my church. You know, I moved to a place where there's no administrative church. Boy, as soon as I can get back to an administrative, I will be in there because I love everything about my church. I want to be there. Okay. Ritz-Carlton. And I wish I could attend. When I read the book, I actually wrote to the manager of Ritz-Carlton in London, asking him if I could bring a group of pastors there to their training. But he never replied, unfortunately. I wish he had. Because I read of a church in America, not an Adventist church, a church called North Point Church, where the lead pastor took his top staff with him to attend, and his dad knew the owner of Ritz-Carlton, so he got in. But he said they went for a day, joining in the training of their staff, and he said that his team came back just energized. They said, we have got so much to learn from Ritz-Carlton. Okay, so how do they go about embedding the culture? This is the first thing they do. They define what their values are, and then they refine them. Ritz-Carlton has a card, which they call the Credo. You can go online and look up Ritz-Carlton Credo, or go to Ritz-Carlton website. And in fact, maybe you could have that ready, Steve, the Ritz-Carlton website. And they have, they originally started with 20 things that we do as a service people who serve. Every employee of Ritz-Carlton, whether they are the guy who parks the cars, or whether he's the manager, or whether he's a porter, every employee is a lady and a gentleman. We are all ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. Nobody is undignified. So they build that into their mindset. We are ladies and gentlemen. So when the porter opens the door, he treats the ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. He serves them like well. And if a customer is rude back to them, they act like a gentleman. What would a gentleman do? Ignore it. Don't get upset. I'm a gentleman. I don't have to be defined by you. Okay. Is there a next? Yes, there's one where they have their list. But it used to be 20. They defined it. This is how we serve. And they had 20 rules. They worked on it and kept working on it, and they refined it. It's now 12. But, so, come again? Okay, basic tasks. There it is. There's the 20 one. The credo will be known, owned, and energized by all employees. This is when an organization needs to know its values. These are our values. And they will be known, owned, and energized by all church members. You have to think about how are you going to do that? How do you make sure? And I was at Newbold Church, preached there a month or two ago, and they have five values really nicely laid out. And I loved it. And I, when I took the service, I commended them. I commended them on their values. And there were about 500 people at church-ish. And I said, how many of you know your sets of values off by heart? And I've forgotten what it is now, but I'd memorized it. And I said, please put your hand up if you know the values of Newbold Church. And about six hands went up. All right, and the pastor was sitting here and he rolled his eyes. He was sitting in the congregation. He rolled his eyes at me, and I said, Pastor, you have got 494 visitors today. He said, yeah, okay. They've got to know them, own them. And as I say, this is the 20 list. There is the 12, much more. It's defined and then refined. Every employee, when they become a member of Ritz-Carlton, employee of Ritz-Carlton, carries this on a card, like a credit card size, in their pocket. They are not allowed to be without it until they have memorized it. And a manager, or they're encouraged to walk around, they might say, Shirley, what's law number six? And Shirley has to repeat it. And you guys can do it. Well, you know, if I said, what's commandment number five? You tell me. It's thou shalt not covet. You know, I would say that. I thought you'd say, no, it's not, Lou. That's number 9 or 10, or you know. But every Ritz-Carlton employee knows it, has to remember it, has to have it in their pocket. Now you might say again, that's because they're employed and they have to do it. But I think it's a matter of saying to our church, do we want to do this? Do we really want to be excellent for the kingdom of God? And do we really want these values to permeate everything we do? Then let's be serious about it. It's not a game. It's not an option. And I go back to Matthew 5:20, where Jesus says, unless your values exceed the values of the scribes and Pharisees, who knew their 365 rules on the Sabbath, probably knew them off by heart, and yet neglected mercy, justice, and kindness. We're serious about it. Know them. I didn't plan to go through them this morning. Steve's pushed me. I'm always responsive to the exhausting and expressed and unexpressed wishes and needs of our guests. Again, every employee is aware of people's needs, and they think about people's needs. When I did the elders and deacons training here, the deacon training here a few weeks ago, I said, that's what you've got to do. You've got to, when these people are walking up the path, you've got to think, these are new people. I need to anticipate what they need, what is in their head. Have we come to the right place? Are these people nice? You know, we're not Adventists, or we are Adventists, or whatever. But it's a matter of sensing their need and anticipating. I'm not going to go through all of them. Okay. Define and refine. That's something the church has to do. You've got to work it through and make sure you understand it. And then it's also a matter of talking about the behaviors. If these are our values, then what kind of behavior should we expect in the church? And be kindly but intolerant of people who don't behave that way. If somebody, and I told you, Stairs, and I can't think of an incidence here, but again, I think of a pastor who said, I read that he was in his church in the foyer, and a young lady came in, and she was dressed in a leather suit, trousers and everything. And he heard the deacon say to her, are you a man or a woman? And she promptly turned around and walked out the door before the pastor could catch her. And he said, I never saw her again. Now that, if you ever run across that, it's a matter of saying to that individual, gently but kindly but firmly, we don't do that here. It's not part of our culture. And having the courage to do that, most of us will say, oh, I think I'll go and tell the pastor, go and speak to them. Well, that means you have not owned it. No, it's my church. It doesn't belong to the pastor. It's my church. And I will be intolerant if Steve is rude to Anthony here. I'll say, Steve, I'm sorry. In our culture, you go down and sit down and talk. You don't be rude like that. But I'm intolerant. I become, because it's my church. Okay, the second one. Empowering people through trust. To become an employee of Ritz-Carlton, you have to go through about 12 interviews. Very, very extensive interviews. They're interviewed by the top management, by the middle management. They're interviewed by the department management where they'll be working. They're interviewed by employees of that department. They're interviewed by random people that are picked from the whole hotel. Now, I'm not saying we do that here, not at all. But the idea is, it's a two-way thing. They want the employee to get it, that this is not just management that talks about values. Every part of the organization talks about values and initiative and values. It's part of our culture. That's who we are. It's not a church where we've got the Ten Commandments on the wall. Our Ten Commandments are written in our hearts. I don't need them on the wall. I've memorized them and they're part of me. And so are our values. They're not just, in this church we are loving and kind and gentle. We shouldn't need that on the wall because it's written in our hearts. Should be. And that's why you carry the card until you have got it written in your heart. If you don't, you keep the card in your pocket. Now, so you select, or at least you, I don't want to say this wrongly. You make it so clear what the culture is in a Ritz-Carlton hotel that if the person says, you know, I really don't want to be nice to people all the time, they will say, maybe I should work somewhere else. Oh, fine. We're very happy. There's another hotel down the road. We'd love you to work there. Go there. All right. Now, I'm not saying we say to new people or church members who are coming along, but I believe that not only should we give them studies on our 28 fundamentals, but I think there's a perfect right for the pastor to say, I also need to explain to you the values of this church. You're not just joining a church of people who mentally believe this. You're joining a church of people who are committed to these values. It's part of our culture. It's who we are. And they need to understand that. And it might be that instead of having 20 interviews, the pastor might say, by the way, as you're preparing for baptism, I'm going to put you with a person who's just going to be a mentor to you, to help you, guide you to develop your spirituality, to understand about prayer and our values, how we go about embedding that into our culture. There are some churches, non-Adventist churches, where you cannot join the church except you tick the beliefs, but you also tick one of their outreaches. I will belong to that door-to-door group, or I'll belong to that singing in the old folks' homes group. And you're not allowed to join unless you tick one of those boxes as well. You're being built into the culture. Now, I'm not saying that's what you do here, but maybe alongside the doctrinal studies, there needs to be a time when they sit down with the pastor or somebody in the church and they explain to them, this is our set of values and this is what it means to us. Because many people say, that's really nice. You're loving and kind and gentle. Okay, I'm happy with that. No, you need to understand, we take this seriously. It is part of our culture. And that's why we are intolerant of people who are whatever. Okay, empowering through trust. Teaching people and so that they become part. But when they have taken in, you trust them. Let me read. Unless employees know that they are truly valued, they often don't invest the extra effort needed to exceed customers' expectations and arrive at innovative service solutions. That story I told you last night about the waitress, and I could tell you a few more. Let me tell you some. I'll leave that for a minute. I'll do it in a minute. That lady, that waitress, was in a Ritz-Carlton hotel. And Steve made the point last night, I think it was Steve, said that, wow, she did it at the cost, her own cost of the taxi. In the Ritz-Carlton organization, every employee is allowed to spend, and catch this, $2,000 a day on any customer to meet that customer's legitimate needs, and they do not have to supply a receipt. So that waitress who went out, caught the taxi, bought the ice cream, simply walks back to her line manager and says, I need $15 to cover what I just did. That's all. He pays her the $15. Now people have criticized that. Isn't there room for abuse? And Ritz-Carlton says no one has ever gone up anywhere near the 2,000. But what they are saying to their employees, we trust you. Because you have now taken in the culture. This is the culture we are, and we want you to feel free to express the kind of commitment to making our place, our organization, the hotel, the best it can be. You can spend $2,000 a day without anyone asking for a receipt. We think about that. What would happen in the church if one of your deacons came in and, oh, there's a bulb missing. It's going to cost £15. Better take it to the board and get it passed by the treasurer and get permission. You know, what if Anthony just came in here, found something broken, repaired it, and just said to the treasurer as he's going out, I repaired the thing and it'll cost £20. What would happen? The treasurer would probably have to say, well, I need a receipt. Well, I didn't bring anybody in to fix it. I fixed it myself. And the parts, did you keep the receipts? No, I didn't. I didn't. But in the Ritz-Carlton organization, there's this trust that's built up, and they express trust in their employees to have the freedom to go do things. I'm not sure how we would translate that. Okay. It's about others. Let me go back to that trust thing. It is correct, and I think Dorothy said it last night, there are different personalities, that is correct. But let me pick on Steve here, he's a friend, so he's all right. Let's say Steve is a grouch, you know. I'll ask Carol then. We mustn't spend our time isolating Steve from the visitors. We have got to challenge Steve. We've got to say, Steve, we trust you. We know that you're going to be loving to people. Grow up into it, Steve. And if Steve is grouchy to Shirley at some point, we say, Steve, we don't do that around here. This is the culture that we are. Steve, you don't do that. And we appeal to Steve and we help to grow him. But we allow him to grow rather than make excuses for him. And we do make excuses, sadly, and because we're afraid to confront. This happened in our office recently. I had done a talk on openness and trusting each other. And one of the directors came to me, and I won't name the director, but he came to me and he said, Lou, you didn't need to talk about that because we are all open here. I said, no, we're not. He said, yes, we are. He said, give me an illustration. I said, well, a few weeks ago, my secretary was on holiday, and I needed a document just proofread and edited. And I said, I went to one of the secretaries, and she just said, that's not my department. Okay, backed off. And I went to another secretary, and she said, Lou, I'd be happy to do that. And she put everything aside, give it to me, Lou. And she edited it and made it much better and handed it back to me. And I felt this was team, we're working together. So I said to this director, you see, one isn't on board as a team, the other was. He said, well, maybe she was busy. And I said, well, just a minute, your department. I said, I went to your department once, and then he stopped me. He says, oh, but my department is an exception. I said, that's because you refuse to talk to the attitudes in your department. He said, okay, and you made your point, and left the room. You know, and that's because we're afraid to confront unacceptable behaviors. And I'm not saying we become confrontive people, but in the culture where everybody is bought into this culture, this is what we are. And everybody else is showing that. I think it's much easier to say to the grumpy Steve here, and I'm apologizing, Steve, to say to grumpy Steve, Steve, don't you love it about our church that this is the kind of culture we're trying to develop? And I, you know, such a kind of person would probably in there not have to be spoken to. But maybe they just need to be made aware and say, don't you love it about our church's culture of anticipating the people's needs and reaching them and helping them to grow? And I'm sure he's not going to say, I don't like that culture. I'm sure he'll say, yeah, I do. And Steve, you know the way you spoke to Susan the other day? And I, people grow. But it's a matter of having the courage to confront nicely. Okay. It's about others. Again, we're going back to this anticipating people's needs. Let me tell you a couple of Ritz-Carlton stories. Some of these are really small. You think insignificant. But if they happened to you and you were at a hotel, you would say, this is a good hotel. It's like kind of my experience in Ireland with the bartender who comes out and says, do you need cutlery and plates? It's a small thing. But it just made us, wow. We go back to that hotel. Even though it wasn't a Ritz-Carlton. It was a very cheap hotel. But we'd go back there simply because if that's the attitude of the guy who works in the bar, I'll go back there. One Ritz-Carlton employee was walking past a lady who was kind of sneezing, and she stopped and says, are you all right? Oh, she says, I've got this cold. She says, I'm off to bed. She says, I'm going up to my room, and I'm going to bed. And, okay, now the Ritz-Carlton lady could have just said, okay, have a good sleep, rest up. That's a good idea. No, she went and found out which room is that lady in. Then she went to the kitchen and made a lemon and honey drink. A nice hot lemon and honey, went up to the room, knocked on the door, and she said, I thought just before you sleep, you should have a nice lemon and honey. And the lady said, wow, she said, thank you so much. It's a small touch, but it's thinking about others and what would make them feel comfortable. And again, you've got to use your imagination to translate that into how we would anticipate people's needs here. Another one. Well, the waitress was another story. Another one is, there was this lady in a lift, and a Ritz-Carlton porter walks into the lift with her, and he says, which floor are you going to? She says, floor 7. So that's fine. And he presses floor 8. So they're going up the lift, and she says, what are you doing on floor 8? He says, no, I'm actually going to floor 6. She says, well, why you pressed floor 8? Because you're going to floor 7, he said. I wanted you to get there first. It might sound stupid, but it's just that ethic of, we are here to serve you, and you come first. And so the guy goes a floor above and then comes back down to the floor he wants to serve him. Another one, a family coming in a car to a Ritz-Carlton hotel, rings in and says, listen, we're late. We're going to be later because our car has broken down. It's nighttime. Our car has broken down. We've rung for the people to come and fix the car, but I don't know how long it's going to take, and I don't know what's going to happen. So I'm just ringing to let you know we are coming tonight. Now, many receptions would just say, okay, don't worry, we'll be here when you arrive. The receptionist says, where exactly are you? And she says, oh, and gives the location. She says, all right, listen, two of our engineers are coming out in a service car, and one of them will stay with your car, the other one will bring the whole family back to the hotel, and so you can get to bed early, and our engineer will stay with your car until it's repaired and make sure it comes back to the hotel. If you were that family, wouldn't you go back to that hotel? And again, it's this, and I'm not saying that your deacons at the door say, oh, you got a broken, let me go out and fix it. You know, I'll get Eric out there to go and fix the car while you enjoy church. No, that's extreme. But it's just this mental attitude of thinking, how can I anticipate the needs? The guy who actually wrote the book that I read said that he asked for an interview with the manager of the head of Ritz-Carlton as he was writing this book. And the manager had to fly across some cities in the States to get to it. And the manager said, when are you coming? He says, well, I'm having to catch a very early flight. It's like, I don't know, 4 a.m. And he said, I'll get there, then I'll come over to the hotel. But the manager says, I'm not free until 11. But the manager says, fine. One of our drivers will meet you at the airport and meet your flight and take care of you. Car meets him, brings him back, takes him straight to breakfast, and then says to him, we have a room reserved for you to sleep in. The manager wanted you to have a rest, and you've got a few hours of sleep. we will wake you up, enough time for you to prepare, and then meet the manager. And again, that's just anticipating somebody's needs. And he said as he was writing this book, he was suddenly struck by this sense of thinking ahead, anticipating a person's need, and meeting it, making people feel comfortable. And, you know, your deacons and deaconesses are your frontline people. And the deacon and deaconess team need to understand it's about others. That's what we're here for. It's all about others. And create that kind of culture when people are coming up. Just, I mean, if you see a person who's walking sick, someone might run out there. Let me take your arm. I'm not trying to make concrete suggestions. I'm just trying to ask you to fly in your head, in your imagination. The values that you have, how do they work out in terms of behaviors that we have in our church? Because it's not enough to stand at the door and think, lovely, these people are coming to church. It's not enough. There's got to be that extra that makes them want to come back. And it can be such a small thing. There's a Sainsbury's near where Karen and I live. And Karen likes to go to Asda because there's more variety. I like to go to the Sainsbury's one shop. It's smaller. But the main reason I like to go there is a West Indian guy who looks after the self-service tills. And he's always chatting and singing. Oh, it's a wonderful day. Can I help you? And he pops up to you. Yeah, man, we can do this. And he's just such a ball of energy and fun. And I love going back there because when he's on, just because it becomes an experience to go to Sainsbury's, because if this guy's on the self-service team, he just makes it fun. I love it. And I think they should double his pay because I think he wins people to the organization. What if your deacon and deaconess team have that kind of mindset? We take our values, we really do mean them, and we work out our behaviors so that we're looking at the needs of people, anticipating, and making them feel welcome. And again, I said it yesterday, you know, Ritz-Carlton hasn't done anything rocket science. It's not rocket science. They have just sat down and thought about what we do, how we implement our values. They've worked it out rigorously, and I think that's what churches have to do. We must not just say, let's be loving, and leave it at that. We've got to work out what that means to be loving. How do we anticipate people's needs so they feel loved? Work it through. But we naturally do this in our homes. I don't know why we find it sometimes difficult to translate to church. You know, you can go to homes where they have a row of slippers ready for you. And they say, take your shoes off and put a nice pair of slippers on. And I mentioned yesterday, hospitality comes natural in our homes. All of us just do it naturally. There's no home here that you could go to, but come in, have a seat, have this seat here, and can I get you a drink? Bathroom's here. You anticipate all those needs, and you look after them, make them feel welcome in your home. That's what hospitality is about. But sometimes we don't do that at church. Just need to translate it across. It is about others. Okay, the last point. Ritz-Carlton says, we deliver wow. And Steve, you could go to the Ritz-Carlton site website again. And they have a tab on their website called Stories, I think it is. When you bring it up, that's it. Go to the... No, just go to the lion, the Ritz-Carlton thing in the middle. Click on that. Oh, memories. It's at the bottom there, memories. Yeah, click on the memories button. That's it. And this part of their website, they have stories that happen at Ritz-Carlton experiences. Now, some of them are, you think, purely advertising, but many of them are stories about people who said, I went to Ritz-Carlton and this happened. And they record, and all of them are stories, and probably the story of the waitress and the car pickup. No, I think I got them from the book. But many stories you pick up from this website, and you go, wow, that is wow. And each of the stories I've told you, small as they are, the lady who takes the lemon and honey drink up to the lady with the cold, that's wow. You go, wow, isn't that great? So they collect all these stories, and you can click on any of these buttons, and it takes you to one of the stories that they've saved onto their website. I'm trying to pick one. I think you can go to another page, or keep going down. Go down up against it. Yeah, go to the next page.
This is a very slow connection.
Now, Ritz-Carlton is a worldwide organization, so these stories come from all over the planet. Next page. There's just one particular small one that I really like, because it illustrates, it's the shoeshine one, which I actually saved onto the... Yeah, okay, let's do the shoeshine one. This to me illustrates the way the whole culture of everybody who works at Ritz-Carlton loves what they're doing.
Okay.
Yep.
I treat every guest like a guest at my own home. I want them to feel welcome and very happy. My favorite part of my day is seeing a guest's face when I'm finished shining their shoes. Admiring how shiny they are makes me very happy. What our guests need, I create experiences that stay with them even after they've left our hotel.
There were so many little one-liners in there, we could have stopped each one. Let me show you how great rewards are achieved by small kindnesses. Nothing is too small as to be unimportant. The favorite part of my day is to see the smile I put on a person's face after they shine their shoes. You know, I love that. And I wonder, and again, you see the opulence of the Ritz-Carlton Hotel. But that kind of care is not determined by how rich you are. As I say, the guy in the bar at this hotel in Ireland was just a very plain hotel. But his touch of care and anticipation made us want to go back to that hotel and it changed the whole hotel. It became a wonderful place, not just a dodgy hotel. And the shoeshine man there that's part of his culture. Favorite part of my day is when I see a person smile because of what I did for them. What about deacons? And deaconesses had the same kind of, I love creating the smile in the members who come to church. Not the grump, but create the smile. What kind of culture is that? And again, you might argue, but they're paid. But it's not a matter of being paid. It's a matter of imbibing the culture. Let me tell you one of the things they do. As I said, each of them has this 12-point creed. Goes in their pocket. This is what we do. This is our nature. Depending on which hotel it is, the manager will line up his staff. In some hotels, it's every day of the week. In some hotels, it's three or four times during the week. He lines up his staff, and they do the what I call the Pathfinder Pledge. They put out their card if they haven't got it memorized, or they repeat it from memory. They go through, we will, da-da-da. Just like the Pathfinders do the Pathfinder Law and Pledge. We do it, okay? And when I was reading this, I thought, this is a bit childish, isn't it? I mean, lining them up every day of the week to repeat the Law and Pledge would drive our Pathfinders batty. But they make it with a difference. This is the difference. At the end of every time they repeat the rule, the law, the creed, the manager steps forward and tells them a story. And I wish Pathfinders would take this up. He tells a story like some of the stories I've touched on this morning. He said, at one of our hotels, this is what happened, and tells the story. And when I read this in the book, the writer was interviewing employees, and they said, he asked them the question, doesn't it a bit childish, this lining up and repeating the creed? And the employee said, it was at first, but then as I listened to the stories, I was going, wow, I want to be like that. I want to deliver that kind of service. And the creed became more than a writing on the wall. It became something I want inside. And so they began to deliver wow. But by telling them wow. And I think our Pathfinders should do the same. Tell the Law and the Pledge, but then tell the story. This is why we do it. It's not because we want to be good little people. It's because we want to be this kind of person. And inspire them with the wow stories. That needs to be taken on board. Praise. I'm going away from Ritz-Carlton for a minute. Simply because I listened to a lecture by a guy called Doug Conant. He just retired this year from Campbell Soups. I thought, I've heard of Campbell Soups. So I went back, and apparently about 10, 12 years ago, Campbell Soups, which is an American-based company, was on the verge of financial ruin, collapse. And they brought Doug Conant in. And Doug said in this talk I listened to, wasn't just a talk, he was talking at Stanford University to a group of leadership people. And he said, I only have one secret. He said, sure, I got the good accountants and I got the good expert people at these different areas, which everybody was trying to do. But he said, this is what I did different. He said, and he calls it, and his lecture was called Touch Points. You might be able to find it online. He said, I decided to praise everybody. Find every way that I could to say, Anthony, you're doing a fantastic job. I would not talk to Anthony about what he's not doing well, but whenever Anthony or Dorothy did something good, they'd go, Anthony, Dorothy, what you're doing is fantastic. And he'd write little notes. He said, over the period of his 10 years, thousands and thousands of notes. But he said, he noticed that as he praised people for what they did good, he said they seemed to step up a notch. And he just kept praising people all around his country, worldwide. He would ask his managers, let me know whatever happens in your company. Tell me the stories, and the stories are important. Tell the stories, and then he'd write a personal letter to maybe someone in a totally different country. He'd write, Thomas, I heard that you did so-and-so, that you preached this good sermon. That was amazing. I love to hear that. And here's my note to say thank you for being part of our company. And Doug Conant says, I turn Campbell Soups around simply by praise. Now that needs to be taken in on board as well. Don't tell them about the stuff they're doing wrong. Maybe there's a time when you do that. But tell them about the stuff they're doing right and say, that was fantastic. Loved what you're doing for our church, for our organization. And at the end, the last part of the clip that I watched was a whole lot of testimonies of people lining up to pay tribute to Doug Conant in his retirement. And they were saying, Doug, I still have the note. You gave it to me 8 years ago. I still have it. This note turned my day around that day and, in fact, the rest of my life working for Campbell Soups. And they'd read out the little notes. And there were some of them just one-liners. Some of them a whole paragraph or a whole page. But they kept them. They stored them up. they just meant so much and helped to build that culture. It's a positive thing we're building. I'm going to stop now. Any things to talk about, or are you ready to go home?